Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Spark London.
We tell true stories.
We tell them live.
And we tell them all across London.
This story was told by Justin Corner
in December 2008.
My virtual reality was spending a year on board a 68-foot yacht. I'd signed up with a company to sail around the world. I wasn't much of a sailor, but for some reason it had always been one of those things I'd wanted to do. I imagine beautiful sunsets, great food, seeing the world, romance of the ocean, wind, man alone with the elements. It all seemed a great idea. And boy did I love the attention I got when asked what I did and could announce dramatically, I was about to sail around the world. Except somehow I'd signed up for a round the world yacht race. And the reality of racing is completely different from my ideas of sailing. I found out on the first day of training that it's awful. There were 10 of us crewing as we went out into the English Channel. It was freezing cold, pouring with rain, a force 8 gale. The boat was getting thrown all over the place with water pouring over the deck and washing us down the boat every time we ventured forward of the mast. Everyone was throwing up, and I, along with everyone else, was just white knuckling it, holding on for dear life, fully expecting to die any moment. And they were trying to teach us how to race. How to change the sails, put in reefs, tack, jibe, none of which I knew what it meant when I was first on that first day. I was soaked through, getting bashed every minute. It was a mass of cuts, bruises, and rope burns by the end of the day. I simply couldn't understand why anyone would do this. I know lots of people who seem to love sailing. What was I missing? I was relieved I could back out of this adventure after the first week of training, so I figured I might as well stick it out for the first week and see if I could find a redeeming feature. The next day, it was Force 9. The day after that, just as bad again. I really wasn't finding it any easier. Then we slept and sailed through the night, and I found out just how unbelievably primitive the accommodation was. It didn't help. I asked everyone I could find, "Why do you do this?" Most of the answers did nothing for me. Love of the ocean? Nope. Freedom from the things of man? No, not that either. I was loving the things of man right now. Independence? And constant pain. Not a good deal. Then I found Kent Castles. He was an American skipper, former Green Beret. He'd done 2 tours in Vietnam. He said, "Justin, it's about manly men doing manly things in a manly way with other men." Now, as ridiculous as that sounds, it actually struck a chord. I've never really had to do anything tough. Been to private school, university, white-collar career. Of course, I thought I was tough, but the idea of proving that I was actually a man and tough enough to do this was quite attractive. I still didn't love the sailing. But then the one thing that did grow on me was once we started doing some friendly racing against the other boats during training. At heart, I've always been fiercely competitive, probably a bit too competitive. And I started to wonder whether we could win this thing. Even if I didn't get that whole love of the ocean thing, if it was something we could win, that could keep me interested. It started as a thought, but quickly turned into a bit of an obsession. Me coming up with all sorts of reasons why we would win this thing. and why it could be me that made the difference. I didn't know anything about sailing, but I teach psychology for a living. Communications, peak performance, team spirit, motivation, conflict handling. And that's what I thought the race was going to be about. The boats were made up by as many as 17 amateur crew, with only the captain as the professional. Realised pretty quickly everyone was going to be constantly exhausted and grumpy. So this race would be the ultimate test of what I knew. If I was any good at my job, we'd have an advantage over every other boat. If we won, it'd be the ultimate affirmation. So on September 16th last year, we lined up against the 9 other boats on a cold, blustery Liverpool day. I had high hopes and at least as high expectations. What I didn't figure on was just how incompetent our skipper was. He was our captain, but also our navigator and tactician. And within 10 days of the first race to Brazil, he put us into every no-wind area possible. We were dead last, at least 2 days behind the leaders, and a good 200 miles behind the second-to-last boat. The morale, as you can imagine, was dire. And for me, given I didn't really like the sailing part of it, without the drive and challenge of competing in this race, everything was just plain unpleasant. I was really wondering what the hell I was doing out there. Eventually, we found some wind. It was a beautiful sunny day, and we were passing through the Cape Verde Islands. We were going fast. Still going to come last by hundreds of miles, but at least we'd get to Brazil one day. The wind continued to build. The boat was hitting new records for speed, occasionally touching 16 or 17 knots, which on a 46-ton yacht feels like you're doing about 90 in a car. It's thrilling. Still under control, but if anything goes wrong, it's going to be bad. My team had just finished our watch. We'd come below for some lunch. Just as we'd finished, the boat suddenly rocked to the right. Then it rocked left. Then it suddenly veered left and sat all the way on its right, on its side, and stayed there. I was holding myself up, just standing on my feet on the wall. I knew this couldn't be good. There was a lot of noise upstairs, yelling, swearing. People were clearly panicked and scared. My friend Aiden went up the companionway. "Fuck," he said, and he didn't swear much. Then we heard something snap. "Fuck!" He dashed on the deck and I followed immediately after him. The boat had broached. Now, essentially what that means is that we'd had too much sail up for the conditions. The boat had got out of control, such that the wind pushed the boat over and had kept it pinned there. By the time I got up the stairs, it was somewhat upright again, but the sight was surreal. I didn't actually burst into tears at that moment, I guess because I was in shock, but I will always remember that feeling. It was of total despondency as I looked at carnage. Our race was over. The idea of another 9.5 months of this, for no purpose, was devastating, and I was close to despair, because we'd destroyed our boat. Our principal downwind sail was flapping violently in the wind, unattached to the boat except for a connection at the mast. Had a massive hole through the middle, and it was shredded down both sides. There was a 15-foot aluminium pole stuck straight out from the mast that was to which the downwind sail was supposed to be attached, but it had snapped in two like a twig. The two halves were just dangling in the wind, with sharp edges threatening to slice anyone to pieces who went forwards. Our mainsail had come all the way down, still attached to the boat, but dangling in the water. All the wires down the right-hand side to keep us in the boat had disappeared. There were ropes everywhere, tangled in a monstrous spider's web. It was over. Somehow we managed to get the boat under control over the next 3 hours. All the broken bits were retrieved and stored below. Mainsail was brought back onto deck, ropes got sorted out, and we put up a single sail to get us through the night while we calmed down and considered how to go on. A couple of days later, I found myself in my bunk in pieces. It wasn't just tears, but an absolutely helpless, uncontrollable, relentless, from the bottom of my soul, chest-heaving sobbing. I guess it was a sense of pointless effort. That this was going to be the hardest, most painful thing I'd ever do, and yet for nothing. We couldn't win this race. We couldn't even compete for any place other than last. We had a useless skipper and a broken boat. I was exhausted, probably in delayed shock. I felt I too was broken. That was it. There was nothing left. We've been told there'll be tough moments and we'd be surprised by the hidden reserves within ourselves. But I was down at that bottom and there was nothing there. I was angry with myself for doing this thing, for being wrong about it, for being weak, for failing, for not being tough enough, for being beaten, for wasting a year of my life on a pipe dream which I didn't even know anything about. I thought about what that American skipper had said. It was a shame because it was clear I wasn't up to it. I hope that's what people mean when they refer to hitting bottom, because I hope there's nowhere lower to go. My virtual reality had turned into a virtual hell. I seriously considered getting off the boat in Brazil and quitting the race. In spite of the shame I'd feel, I couldn't see any point continuing when it was this miserable. Anyway, we eventually made it to Brazil, where it turns out it's amazing how much you can fix on a boat. We got the sewing machines out, we stitched and stitched around the clock to put our sails back together. Pole got fixed, we got new guard wires. Amazingly, we got a new captain. Somewhere during that week, I decided to keep going a bit longer. Now, there were many more adventures over the next 9 months, some of which were probably a lot hairier than that day off Cape Verde. But nothing else got me down again that badly. I think that to keep going, I had no choice but to change. It wasn't a conscious decision, but something inside just got stronger and got tougher. To just deal with the adversity, get through each day trying to enjoy the few nice moments that would crop up occasionally, whether it was whales jumping, dolphins playing, a full moon, crystal clear starry nights, or the camaraderie on the foredeck we got while we were being pounded during manoeuvre. And the person I ended up as is different. To be honest, doesn't completely understand how I got so down, even though I do remember it very clearly. I feel sort of like a friend. I'm sympathetic to what happened, but no longer able to empathise. In any event, by the time we did finally get back to Liverpool, it turned out I'd been quite wrong to believe our race was over. Bit by bit, somehow we turned things around. We kept improving our overall position until we returned as the unlikely winners of the race. How did we pull it off? Well, that's another story.
For more stories, head to sparklondon.com.
Spark London is produced by Joanna Yates, with audio production by Matt Hill at rethinkdaily.co.uk.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.